and I think this was the real reason, because we were constantly harnessing the dogs and hooking them to the four-wheelers and taking off on long runs, where we would stop and feed them in the bush. That took the dogs away from the ravens, their true masters, during feeding time. So I went out one morning, and the ignition keys for two of the four-wheelers were gone. The other two sets were still in the ignitions, but the first two were missing. Just like that. I saw Leo on the other side of the kennel, and knowing that he was from a semi-urban environment in the lower 48, and perhaps was worried about theft, all but impossible in the bush where we lived, I called, "We don't have to pull the keys on the four-wheelers." "I haven't touched them." And even as I watched, a large raven landed on one of the four-wheelers, reached up, and deftly pulled the ignition key out of its slot and threw it on the ground, hopped to the remaining machine, pulled the key, threw it down, and then flew away. They knew. They had watched us with the four-wheelers and knew that we used the key to start them, to run them, and by pulling the key would keep us from running dogs with them, from taking away the food on long runs. I wondered then, for the first real time, how much of our intelligence, our supposed intellect, which made us feel superior and full of manifest destiny, how much of that was and is purely self-delusional. And I knew so surely that it brought a cold feeling to the back of my neck, a cold, self-delusional little breeze back there. All? Is it all just us deceiving ourselves? So we found the keys on the ground and wire-tied them back into the machines so the ravens couldn't pull them out, thwarting them just this once, just now an insult to them, so that they had one more thing to say, one more thought. The next morning, just daylight, I went out into the kennel to sip tea and be with the dogs before feeding time. The morning sounds were so soft, so gentle and relaxing. And there, on the ground in front of one of the best lead dogs, lay something new. Half an orange, cut and juiced. Just sitting there. And when I looked around the kennel, I could see more of them. Dozens, scores of them, scattered in front of the dogs. Leo came out of his cabin then, and I asked him if he'd been eating oranges and juicing them and throwing the peels into the kennel. I knew better, but I asked anyway.
"I don't eat oranges."
Of course he didn't. I knew better. And as I stood there, overhead came a wave of 8 or 10 ravens, flying in from the east, where, a mile away, a family with children lived, and I knew I would find that they ate oranges that had been juiced, and they threw their peelings on a compost pile, and the ravens were picking them up and flying a mile back and bombing the kennel with them. An answer. An answer to the wired-in ignition keys. Garbage on our heads. Humor? A prank? And I picked up an orange peel and knew that no matter what we did, the ravens would be there, would always be there, at least one step ahead of us. And that brought perhaps a new bit of knowledge to come from the ravens. They, and all birds, are said to have descended from the dinosaurs. Extrapolating backward, and knowing that the dinosaurs had literally millions of years to evolve, grow, and perfect what they were, isn't it probable that if a raven could make jokes, could make pranks, could drop orange peelings on my head, couldn't dinosaurs laugh? Interrogatum, three things to learn. 1. When a lawnmower goes over a lawn with tall dandelions in it and cuts them down, the stalks never grow back up above the height of the mower blade. How do they know it? And how do they tell the plant to stay below this certain height, as if measured? 2. If an earthworm is placed in a glass tube with two forks and in one of the forks a wire with a tiny bit of electricity is placed, so that if the worm goes up that fork and hits the electricity, it will feel mild discomfort. Then that worm will always go up the other fork. While they have small ganglia, earthworms have no real brain, and probably no forms of communication other than chemical slime, and so probably no real memory. If placed with another worm who has never been in the glass tube and then separated, and the new worm is let go in a glass with two forks, the new worm will always take the safe fork, as if he'd been told. How can this be? 3. It is said that the weight of all the ants on the planet far exceeds the weight of all humans on the planet, and that in organization and numbers, ants far exceed humans. They will, for instance, kidnap eggs from other ant mounds, hatch them out, raise them, and use them as slaves, a level it was thought only humans had sunk to. Does all this not make ants the largest and most successful species on the planet?
This Side of Wild, Mutts, Mares, and Laughing Dinosaurs was written by Gary Paulson and read by Fred Sanders. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Ashley Lehman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. This Side of Wild is available in print from Simon & Schuster Books for Young Readers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.